Harihi Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahavirayankaravavahai Tejasvinavaditamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. Okay, so page 37, Sambandha. The concept of God. Kama Mimamsa does not admit the existence of God as the creator and destroyer of the universe. There's no good reason to accept that the universe had beginning in time, or that God created it. Every day millions of living entities are born by the action of parents without the agency of any God. Footnote 19. This is refuted in Bhagavad Gita 14.4 where the Lord states, it should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible by birth in this material nature, that I am the seed-giving father. Because the idea is that if man, by his endeavor, is getting the results, then you're inspired to do the results. Because otherwise, then it might be left, you know, to let God take care of it. Right? So then, the Karma Mimamsaka's idea is that since you're supposed to be pious, supposed to do all these things, right, then it has to be that it's more up to you to do that. Right? Because like if I do it, I'll get benefit, and if I don't do it, I don't get benefit, then that's one thing. But if I don't do it, then nobody gets benefit, you know. So it's kind of like more my responsibility to have more of a tendency to do things. Right? So it works in that way for them. Yes.
They don't admit the existence of God, so they don't.
Not as they don't admit the existence of God as creator and destroyer. Because the thing was, it's always here, it always will be. Because their idea is eternally you'll be happy on the material platform. So if there's a destruction, then that's a problem, because then you can't be materially happy forever. So therefore they don't seem to work with that. I mean, you kind of have to admit something about it, because there is the thing of the body's there, then it ends, and then you go to the heavenly planets. So that would also mean that there's other aspects, that the particular aspect of the world wouldn't end, or something else wouldn't end. So it's just the body ending is just the smallest of the circles, right? Because then this mandala ends, you know, after each, you know, cycle of four yugas. Then the higher planets, you know, after how do you say? At the end of the manvantars, right? And then all the way up to Satyaloka at the end of the day of Brahma, right? That. So, you know, those things they don't seem to focus on much, I guess, because it's not happening. Unless it's happening right now, then it's not, you know, why worry about it? You know, you're talking about, I mean, it's 4,300,000 years is the cycle of the four yugas. So that times 72, right? You know, so,
okay.
Yeah, it's you don't have to worry about it. Some, you know, hundreds of millions of years, so then they don't seem to get into these things. Yes.
Yeah. So this seems to be one aspect of karma, but where is this aspect comes from, where people saying that if it's my karma, I do work, or I don't do any work, I'll get it anyway.
You will get it anyway, but you won't get anything in the future.
This is not from this theory.
No, because their point is they're looking at the future.
Yeah, so they need
the results. Means I'm getting now from what work I've done in the past, so that you'll get anyway. But the point is if I want it to continue, I have to continue doing work. You know, when we talk about the point that your results of your work will come to you anyway.
Yeah.
But that's just how karma works. So Prabhupada's making the point, it's not because I'm working today, that's why I'm maintaining myself. It's from past that it's happening. You know, because we have this idea, if I stop work or something, then I'll die. No, you won't die, because you'll be getting the results of your past work. So the point is if that's what's distracting you from Krishna consciousness, don't worry about it, because, you know, life goes on, so you have to be Krishna conscious. But the point is if we think, well, I'll get it anyway, so I don't have to work, then that's just laziness. Because the point is yes, you'll get from the past, but you won't get in the future. Just like, let's say, this week, let's say I get paid every week, right? So now, if I get paid on Saturday or something, then, you know, I'll get, till next Saturday, I have money. So whether I go to work or not, I have money. But the problem is when next Saturday comes, then you don't have money. Right? So that's the whole point, is you cannot work now. You'll get the results from the past, but at some point that runs out. So unless you're doing something to generate in the future, you won't have. But if you're doing Krishna conscious activities, pious activities are already included, so you're already taken care of. So the point is you don't have to continue doing material activities. Your spiritual activities will give you that result. You know? But, of course, because it's being done for Krishna, you know, the pure devotion is free from karma and jnana, so it's going to be how Krishna wants to take care. You know what I'm saying? It's just like the dog is taken care of. It gets fed, it has but according to how the master wants to take care of it, not how the dog wants to be taken care of. Yeah, so like that. So there's the element of trying to bring out the mode of goodness, but you can also misapply it and use it for ignorance. So that's where the problem comes in.
And this is basically rajasic.
This is basically rajasic, but you're using the principles of goodness to get it. Right? In other words, I'm using good qualities, I'm using sacrifice, I'm performing my correct duties, I'm doing them in the present. So all that's mode of goodness. You know, there's some knowledge. But the problem is the reason for it is fruitive. So it has that passion. So you say ultimately it's a mode of passion. But it's high-grade passion in that they're using the Vedic, you know, proper duties like that. While, let's say, someone's not using the Vedic, but they're using, you know, what is accepted within their particular society is appropriate and proper. So they're doing that. So that, you could say, itself is the mode of goodness that they're doing. What they're doing may not be the mode of goodness. You know, that's the mode of ignorance. But they're doing it for the mode of passion. You know what I'm saying? So you have all three modes, you know, like that. You could say broad range of experiences. Yeah, like that. But, yeah. Okay. Neither is it necessary, as some other schools hold, that Dharma and Adharma should have a supervisor, because they belong to the performer, and no one has any knowledge of them. Okay. In other words, I do something, and then there's good and bad work. So you don't have to have someone in control of it. That's their idea, because I'm doing the good work or I'm not doing the good work. So you don't have to have someone controlling that I do good work or that I don't do good work. You know? So you get rid of the problem of the devil, but you also then don't have, you know, good work also, you know, like that. Yes.
How they answer who's giving the results?
I think there they have someone in control of giving results. But there's no one in control of bad work.
Only the good work?
Yeah, it doesn't seem to be good work either, because it's up to you whether you do good or bad. And just whichever you do, you'll get the results. Right? Yes.
So that's the problem. There is no Dharma or Adharma.
There's no Dharma. No, there's no one in charge of. No one supervising.
But how do you define it if it's just whatever you
do? No. It's not saying that it's whatever you do. It's saying that you're doing them, but others don't have that knowledge of what you're doing. But the point is the demigods do, because everything is watching, right? The sun, the moon, the day, the night, the air, you know, the wind, the earth, yeah, you know, they're all watching, so.
But I'm thinking that if there is such a thing as Dharma, there should be someone who defines this is Dharma, and then something else is then Adharma.
Yeah, no, that's there. Let's see if that comes up.
Yeah.
secrets, because so far it hasn't.
They also follow the Vedas. It should be defined there, because yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it'll have to be defined there, but then exactly, let's see how it comes up.
All right. These questions are answered.
As we go. Okay. Okay. So we will continue. We'll push on and then see what happens. Moreover, God cannot... there's a footnote. Okay, footnote 20. Actually, according to Srimad Bhagavatam 6.142, there are many witnesses of dharma and adharma, pious and impious deeds. The sun, sun, fire, sky, air, demigods, moon, evening, day, night, directions, water, land, and supersoul himself all witness the activities of the living entity. So even the twilight, because if it's not day and it's not night, then who's watching in between? Right, so twilight is watching. Right? So that's the twilight zone. So that's, okay. Okay. Moreover, God cannot supervise dharma and adharma since he does not have any tools or body wherewith to fashion the world as a carpenter. God cannot have a motive to create the world, neither as a merciful or as a cruel act, because in the beginning there was no entities towards whom he could direct his feeling of mercy. Moreover, he himself will be in need of creator to create him. Thus, according to Karma Mimamsa, there is no God, no creator, no creation, and no dissolution. The world has ever been running the same without any new creation or dissolution. Right? So it makes it quite simple. Right? Do good work, and you'll be happy forever. Right? You know, so, like that. So we can see is even though it can defeat the others on certain levels, it itself has many major flaws.
Positive.
Yeah, they're very positive, but they're very, very proud.
Optimistic.
Because your smartas, like generally, because smartas are either following all the rules for bhukti or following all the rules for mukti, right? Yeah. And so just depending upon which god or demigod. So this area of smartas is very, very big, right? So basically, all Brahmins who follow the Veda and perform their duties, but don't have, you know, there's an impersonal concept of God or no God, then they're all in that category. So they might be, you know, the Panchopasana, they're doing different kinds of yajnas or not, or whatever Vedic, authorized Vedic method for generating piety, they're doing it. But the problem is whether it's more on karma or more on jnana, like that. But it's definitely not on bhakti.
Are they still practice?
Smartas? Yeah, no, there's smartas. They're there. There's tons of them. You know, they practice all this like that. You just, you know, maybe there'll be less of them in your big cities. But if you go out of the city, especially into the, you know, the holy places, and or just into areas that aren't so controlled like that, there's lots of them like that. It's just we won't see them, right? Because we're in the lectures in Yavanas. Why would we see them? Right, because they'll be in their own circle, stay out of the way, so they're not about to move around on the streets with a riffraff, you know, like that. So you don't see them. If you know what to look for, you can find them. You know, you have to know the symptoms. You know, like a tracker in the forest, you can tell when someone went. So you know, if you're a tracker, you can tell where the Brahmins are. Okay, the concept, this idea is refuted in Bhagavad Gita 17 through 21. 17 through 21 or 17:21?
Should be the chapter here.
Third chapter, 17:21, okay. By human calculation, 1,000 ages taken together form the duration of Brahma's one day. And such also is the duration of his night. At the beginning of Brahma's day, all living entities become manifest from the unmanifest state. Again and again, when Brahma's day arrives, all living entities come into being, and with the arrival of Brahma's night, they are helplessly annihilated. Yet there is another unmanifest nature, which is eternal and is transcendental to this unmanifested and this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme, it is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. That which the Vedantists describe as unmanifest and infallible, that which is known as the supreme destination, that place of which, having attained it, one never returns. That is my supreme abode. Right, so they might even be getting off of this, I don't know. But just twisting it into that sphere, you know. You know, it means it's not an uncommon thing. We could say, how could they do? But much of the world religions, they talk about spiritual, but it'll happen here. You know, you're going to go to heaven, but in this body. You know, and so, you know, all that kind of jazz. You know? Yeah. Okay. Okay, the concepts of gods and goddesses. Modern scientists have developed mathematical equations and scientific laws to describe the order and lawfulness of the universe, and thereby increase man's power and control over its phenomena. Likewise, the Vedic sages developed immense powers of knowledge of the underlying order, lawfulness, structure, and dynamics of the phenomenal world. According to the Kama Mimamsa system, the universal controllers who wield cosmic power and maintain the universal order are to be scientifically comprehended through the sound of mantras. Right, so still, they just break it down to a science. You follow the science, so it becomes mechanistic. The people aren't really what's important. You follow the process, it works. So they leave out, the thing is that here, even if someone follows the process, if you don't like it or the attitude is wrong, it doesn't work. But somehow or another, the whole rest of the universe, it does work. Right? It doesn't work on this small level, but on this big level it works. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
Well, but...
You know, like a little kid, you know, they have the rock, they can't knock over the, you know, the bucket or so, whatever it is they're trying to do, but, you know, with their rock, they could blow up the whole thing, you know, like this. You know, so they think like this. You know.
Verbal cognition.
Yeah, so that's funny. So they do it through mantras, the sound of mantras. So for them, sound is very important. The deities or gods are the personified forms of principles that correspond to the vibrating sound powers of mantras. For an uneducated person, the equation E equals MC squared is just a meaningless arrangement of lines on a piece of paper. But for those with sufficient understanding of physics, this formula can help one to comprehend the nature and dynamics of the universe. The Karma Mimamsakas have a similar concept of Vedic mantras, as do physicists of their formulas. Right, so their idea is you understand the mantra and how it works, then you understand how the universe works. On one level, it's correct, but the problem is they don't understand the bigger of how the Lord is there and he's the controller and all that. So in other words, they're only concerned, I do my pious activity, I get my results, so that's all their field concerns. So they don't have to go beyond that. So that's where the weakness, just like the others may accept God as creator, maintainer, destroyer, but because their point is not to develop a relationship with him, it's not an area of discussion. Right? It's just he's there, and he did all this, okay, and we're here, and if we do this, we'll get out of here. That's all. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, there could be some leader of state in some other country, but if you're not going there, what do you care? You know, but we're not saying he's not there. It's just that, you know, what's the big deal? Does that make sense?
What's the big deal with God?
Yeah, like that. Some critics of Karma Mimamsa philosophy accuse the system of promoting polytheism. But there's an underlying unity. The Mimamsakas believe in an all-pervading consciousness that manifests itself in different stages, each of which has a different form, deity, and sound vibration, mantra. Thus exists the apparent diversity of deities and mantras to represent the unitary consciousness. So this is the original Unitarian church, right? Yeah. So in other words, we see now it's borderlining on, okay, God's not there as a person, but as Brahman, basically, he is. So there's that over-underlying consciousness of everything, and the manifestation of that for various purposes is there, but it's still that one consciousness. So the demigods being in charge of the various potencies of the Lord, of various offices of the Lord to get something done, in this way, then they're representing the Lord. So on one sense, you know, that they have some connection there. But the problem is they don't understand the personal aspect. So even the demigods are persons doesn't really matter. All that's important is that they're part of this formula. Right? So therefore, I do my work, I get my results. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like you go into the store, and there's people there, and they're taking the money and get this, that, or helping you here. But for someone who's so self-centered, it doesn't really matter that they're people. It could be robots. It doesn't matter, right? You know. But the point is that it's only getting my work done. I go into the store, I pay money, I get my goods, right? I go to the place, I take it off the shelf, I've done my good work, I have it. Now, if I pay for it, I can walk out, right? So if there's people involved or not involved, it doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? Just like, what is it? I'm not sure what it is. Maybe, I'm not sure if it's Novotel or if there's some. It's a French line that there's no people. It's all you go in and everything's done through machines like that. I'm sure at night people come and do something, but your interaction, you can go into the hotel, use it and leave, and there's no people. Yeah, it's all with card. So that's the point. As long as it works, what do you care? You know, it's like if I give my card to the person and they process it, or I put it in the machine and it processes it, what do I care? As long as they process it.
Right,
you know.
Right. Means they are very highly impersonal.
Very highly impersonal, yes.
With a French?
Like that. Okay, and then about the covering your mom's again.
So.
yeah. But no, it's the thing is they're very impersonal, but with the twist of karma. Well, the others are impersonal with that twist of gyan.
Would the others be higher?
Yes, means that's why we'll see is that the Vedanta, so the impersonal Vedanta is still higher than the karma mimamsakas, because they're understanding better how the whole thing works. They're seeing a better thing, though at the same time is that, you know, it's all illusion. So it means, in other words, the Mayavadi can see all the different levels, but it's just, it's all illusion. But the Karma and Mimamsakas don't seem to accept all the levels. They just kind of there. Because that's the whole point, is there's only, it means ultimately there's only karma and jnana. It's just what are the mixes. So these six schools are the most consistent in their particular mix. Like that. And then outside of that, then they start breaking down and they have a little from here, a little from there and that. So, you know, just as, you know, everything's made out of earth, water, fire, air, and ether. So all philosophies, you know, are made out of these six. Like that. Then it's just a matter of the particular combination. You know. Is that okay? Yeah. So I hope. Okay. Thus exists. Okay. The Mimamsakas believe in an all-pervading consciousness that manifests itself in different stages, each of which has a different form, deity, and sound vibration mantra. Right? So if you know the mantra, then you understand the whole connection. Thus exists the apparent diversity of deities and mantras to represent the unitary consciousness. So that's why it doesn't matter to them which one you worship or which mantra you use. It's just a different manifestation. So there's a difference, but the result is there's no. And unless it's a particular thing you want. You know, you want health, you worship this deity, you want that, you worship that deity. But the idea is that for them, they're very liberal because it doesn't matter which deity you worship and all that. As long as you're following the Vedas, following the proper rituals, what deity, what mantra, they're not so worried about it. Like that. But at the same time, as that means they make no differentiation. They can't tell higher and lower or anything like that. Because for them it's just all just the one consciousness. The process of manifestation begins with the emergence of the most subtle forms, from which the grosser and more delineated forms are then manifested. This process has been described in various ways in different scriptures. In the Vedic tradition, phototypic entities are involved as deities. Oh, prototypic. Not phototypic. Phototypic, okay. Prototypic entities are involved as deities, demigods and demigoddesses, each characterized by a particular set of superhuman qualities. The Vedic demigods radiate from the source of energy that generates all forms and names. Karma Mimamsakas see them as thought forms that represent the cosmic powers. Karma Mimamsaka philosophy does not conceive of the demigods as being identical to particular physical forms. If they were physically embodied, it would not be possible for a single deity to be present at many different rituals being performed in different places at the same time. Right? Because the idea you have, you know, millions of you know, karma mimamsakas doing a yajna, because it's an auspicious time or it's the time of year to do that. How is that demigod present in all if he has a physical form? Mm. So their concept of the deity is not so much the physical form as the thought. Mm. You know, there are a particular thought pattern and this and that from that unlimited consciousness. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So this way they get around that. But the problem is they are a person, they do have feelings, and they do, you know, deal or not deal according to how you're dealing properly. You know?
So, it's very jealous.
Yes, but at the same time, because they don't want to acknowledge that, it's just, I've done the work, I get the result, therefore those sides of it you don't get into. Does that make sense? Just like you go, like we were saying, going to the store and you deal with the people in the store, how you feel, you know, you should deal with them to get your result. You're not worried that they're persons and things like that, really. So the same way with the demigods, they're quite impersonal. Like they just don't deal in that way.
It means that the only devotees deal personally with demigods, because these are the only ones who worship them at all, among all the systems, and they also don't deal with them personally.
Basically. Like, I mean, you might have some that have a little bit more sentiment and some with less. So it just depends upon whether in their line probably there's more karma or jnana also. But in actuality, the only ones who actually deal personally are Vaishnavas, because they're the ones who, unless you understand the Lord is a person, how will anybody else be a person? Right? So only Vaishnavas actually know how to behave. Like, now, if they don't behave, then, you know, you have a problem. But the point is others, even they behave nicely, but ultimately, you know, they're behaving nicely with you only because they're supposed to behave nice. Or only by behaving nice you get your work done. It's not that you as a person they actually care about. It appears that way, you know, but it's not. That's what we're discussing this morning about the liberal. They're worried about the principle. It's not actually about the individual, right? It means, in other words, they look at the individual whether the principle is being applied. Well, the conservative looks at the group whether the principle is being applied, right? So, in other words, the liberal is more about the exception, and the conservative is more about the rule. Yet it would not be correct to conclude that karma mimamsakas think the forms of the demigods are imaginary. Right? In this philosophy, the deities emerge as primal forms and sound bodies, mantras endowed with perfect bliss and happiness beyond all mundane experiences. Though it seems that deity and mantra are two distinct principles operating on two different levels, in reality they are one and the same. The deity is a gross physical form of a mantra, and a mantra is a subtle form of a deity. When the sequence of vibration of a mantra is materialized into a particular form or shape, this is called a deity. Likewise, a materialized form can be dematerialized and reduced to certain frequencies of vibration that will be heard as mantra. Right, so they kind of have a little bit of trying to put it together, but always we have to remember is that their point is this: what they're going to get from it. So even if they, in other words, those things that they miss is because it doesn't really matter for getting something from it, material, right? And those things that they have, but then the weakness is it's still not connected to the Supreme. So in any way it's going to be weak. There are certain rules by which a mantra converts into a deity and a deity converts into mantra. Both deities and mantras operate on a principle similar to the conversion of energy into matter and matter into energy in physics. Wherever a particular ritual is performed with the proper utilization of mantras, the deity related to those mantras is present, because when the vibration is concentrated, the materialized form of the deity appears. According to the Karma Mimamsa theory, the vision of a deity does not therefore depend on the grace of that deity. Rather, the deity or form is manifest wherever the mantra related to it is pronounced in a prescribed manner, and it then has to yield the desired objects that are believed to be provided by it. All right, so that's where it comes in. It's not that it's personal, you have to please them. You have to chant the mantra correctly. Right? So they're pleased when you chant the mantra correctly. That's why you get it. But they don't look at it like that. They look at it, you don't have to please them, you just have to chant the mantra correctly.
Mm-hmm. Do they have any concept of what is consciousness? Did I miss that? Or?
Because it seems no, just mention that there's the universal consciousness.
It seems like they have no clue.
Yeah, well, we haven't gotten down to the soul yet. So this is now God, and then there's... So, in other words, God as a person doesn't seem to be important to them, and he's not the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So therefore, we've gotten rid of Bhagavan and Paramatma, basically. Mm. And so what we're left with is Brahman. So they don't say that that's not there.
Mm.
You know, and so then everything's a manifestation of Brahman. So then there is the form, but that's the manifestation of the mantra.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So you chant the mantra right, they manifest. You don't chant it right, they don't manifest. Right? So they think it's up to you. So it's not a matter of you didn't chant the mantra properly, so that's why they didn't manifest, because they didn't want to. No, it's if I chant it right, they have to, and if I don't, they won't. You know. So it's very, you know, individual centered. Right? Yes.
So most of the yagyas described in the Puranas, it's all those kind of yagyas.
It's those kind of yagyas, but you don't have to do it with this mentality. Right? Means, in other words, karma kanda doesn't have to be done from a karma mimamsa perspective.
It doesn't have to.
No. Oh. Right? But it's just that generally they're the ones that get involved in it. Right?
Because they like it? Or?
That means they see the benefit. They understand piety, working according to Shastra, this and that, mode of goodness, all that kind of thing. But the point is that it's ultimately just up to them, right? While the others may worship and then they have... But ultimately they say it's all impersonal anyway, so even if they accept them more as persons, then maybe there's grace, but ultimately then it's all impersonal. That's the problem one will always end up with. So you might have something that's between karma, mimamsa, and Vedanta. You know, kind of in between. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but it'll be a mix of those. That's the thing. According to the Karma Mimamsaka system, the vision of a deity does not therefore depend on the grace of that deity. Rather, the deity or form is manifested wherever the mantra related to it is pronounced in a prescribed manner, and it then has to yield the desired objects that are believed to be provided by it. Right? Means they have to give. I've done the work. The Karma Mimamsaka system does not rely on the grace of God for attaining worldly things or achieving liberation. Adepts of Karma Mimamsa philosophy have full confidence that the cosmic powers can be utilized at will by proper execution of ritual. So in other words, you control the universe by following these rituals. Now why it's those rituals, who decided those rituals, doesn't seem to be...
They address this also.
They address that? Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, in their Abhideya or something. Okay. Karma Mimamsa, okay, footnote 22. According to Vedanta, however, the jiva can attain his goals without the mercy of the Lord. Or cannot. According to Vedanta, however, the jiva cannot attain his goals without the mercy of the Lord. In both the Mundaka Upanishad 3.2.3 and the Katha Upanishad 1.2.3, it is said, Nayam atma pravechanena labhyo na medhaya na bahuna shutena yam evaisha vrinute tena labdhyas tasyaisha atma vrinute tanum svam. The Supreme Lord is not obtained by expert explanations, by vast knowledge, or even by much hearing. He is obtained only by one whom he himself chooses. To such a person, he manifests his own form. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 7950. The Vedas enjoin, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labdhyo Na Mehaya Na Bahuna Shutena. One cannot understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead simply by studying the Vedas and offering prayers. Only by the grace of the Supreme Lord can one understand him. The process of understanding the Lord, therefore, is bhakti. Without bhakti, simply following the Vedic injunctions to understand the absolute truth will not be helpful at all. Right, so even you're studying, trying to follow the absolute truth, if you're not actually surrendered to the Lord, you know, or without his grace, you're actually not going to get understand the Lord. You can't. The Lord reveals himself, then it works. He doesn't reveal himself, doesn't work. Very simple. Mm-hmm. Oh, down here. Only by the grace of the Supreme Lord can one understand him. Okay. Without bhakti, simply following the Vedic injunctions to understand the absolute truth will not be helpful at all. The process of bhakti is understood by the Paramahamsa, one who has accepted the essence of everything. The results of bhakti are reserved for such a Paramahamsa, and this stage cannot be obtained by any Vedic process other than devotional service. Other processes, such as jnana and yoga, can be successful only when mixed with bhakti. When we speak of jnana yoga, karma yoga, and jnana yoga, the word yoga indicates bhakti. Bhakti yoga or buddhi yoga, executed with intelligence and full knowledge, is the only successful method for going back home, back to Godhead. If one wants to be liberated from the pangs of material existence, he should take no devotional service. He should take two devotional service for quick attainment of his goal. So in other words, all these other processes of activity and knowledge are only useful if they're connected to bhakti. Right? So bhakti has activity and knowledge, but it's connected to the Lord through devotion, therefore it's effective. But if it's not connected to the Lord through devotion, it's not effective for getting the Lord. I mean, you might be able to get some other material things from it, but even that's only by the Lord's grace. But then it's not directly involved with the Lord. Karma Mimamsa identifies two purposes of ritual: to obtain and expand one's own inner potential, and to unite it with the cosmic force, and to pay respect and show gratitude to the cosmic forces that are constantly supplying light and life to all sentient beings. This is considered to be one of the foremost duties of human beings and should be an inseparable part of everyone's life. Hmm. Okay. So that theme seems to be used a lot in the modern. Right, so another, there's a cosmic force. You have to show respect and gratitude by the proper performance of your duties. Right, that's how you do. So you're doing this, you're showing there, but at the same time it's mechanistic, and somehow or another just you get what you want. So it somehow or another has that little glimmer of something nice, but at the same time in practicalness not. You know, it's like the guy, you meet the big guy, oh hi, how are you, this and that, you meet him again and he doesn't remember who you are. We met before? You know, so it's like that. And then, you know, on one, it's kind of one-sided. The concept of the soul. The conception of the soul in Karma Mimamsa is more or less like that of the other schools, such as Nyaya Vaisheshika. Karma Mimamsa considers the soul to be an immortal, eternal substance, which is related to a real body and a real world, and it survives death to be able to reap the consequences of its actions. Consciousness, however, is not intrinsic to the soul. It arises in it only when it is associated with the body, and then also only when an object is presented to organs of knowledge. Right, so it's a similar kind of thing. You see, the thing is presented to the senses, therefore it's seen.
Yeah.
Not shown, it's not seen. So I chant the mantra, I get the benefit. Mm-hmm. The demigod's there. I don't chant the mantra, the benefit's not there. The demigod doesn't manifest. You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a consistency in there. Inconsistency, right? You know, the bogusness has a consistency. That's why it's given that there's six philosophies, because they're consistent. Every aspect of it is consistent within itself. It may be completely bogus, but the point is it's consistent. That's why we say there's six schools, right? Because everything else will be mixes of all these, right? So that's going to be the problem. There'll be an inconsistency. But you don't have to worry. If you understand these six schools, whichever school they're speaking at the moment, then that's the presentation, the arguments you'll make. Right? Because Vedanta already covers it all. And Vedanta is consistent, and complete. So whichever aspect of incomplete they're presenting, then you have, a discussion to deal with it. Does that make sense? The liberated soul, which is disembodied, has no actual consciousness, although it has the potentiality of it. So if he's not conscious, then how does he appreciate that it's good? But I guess there are ideas that the wakeful state is so annoying that the, kind of sleeping state is good.
And if you ask any Westerner,
so this would be like philosophy for sleep-deprived people or something.
Something like that. If you ask a Westerner, what's the
anxiety enhanced?
Anxiety enhanced.
Anxiety enhanced, emotionally disturbed, and sleepless people. Then these philosophies are very good.
That's the prescription.
So you were saying?
Yeah, no, Westerners. If you ask them what's the best time of the week, they'll say the weekends because they can sleep late. So it must be.
Yeah, something.
The best time.
Yeah.
What's that concept of liberation?
Concept of liberation. I guess it mentions it's kind of like the other ones.
It's coming up later.
It's coming up later. Coming up later. See, you're always ahead of the time.
Or he's going back now.
Yes, it's coming up later. that's an interesting perspective on it. Yes. No, that's coming up tomorrow. Okay. The concept of the material nature. According to Mimamsa, the world is eternal, without beginning or end. The conception of God as the creator of the world is unnecessary. It is impossible to prove the existence of God. If we accept that God created the world, then we must accept that he is an evil being because there is so much evil in the world. Right? So, you get into these problems. Actually, both good and evil existing in the world are results of men's good and bad actions. So they have that understood. But the point is if he created the world, why would it be bad? People are the ones that are doing the good and bad. So they answer their own question.
Yeah.
But somehow another... But then they would have to please him. So if he's not about, then it makes it very easy.
It's a good excuse to get him out of the way.
But you understand, here you're starting to touch on some of the... Also, many of the world religions, they have elements of this karma mimamsa.
Yeah.
Like that, because it means the world is without beginning or end. So it's not that... In other words, it's the idea that I do good work, I'll be in heaven. But their point is that heaven is how you create it.
Mm.
I do good work, I'm in a heavenly situation. I do bad work, I'm in a hellish situation. So it's not a matter of that, this place is going to turn into it on its own.
Mm.
It's that I do the work, it automatically happens. Mm. Right? So, yes.
Do they believe in reincarnation?
Yes, yes. Because otherwise, how do you get your work go on?
Because if I do good work, I get heaven right now, but it means I did good work before.
Right. No, but that's so I'll have it in the future. They know that I'm having a good situation now because of previous. But the point is they want to maintain it, so that's why they're doing good now.
And their conception of God, he's not the creator, he's not the destroyer, he's not giving them anything.
Yeah, so basically he doesn't exist. That's the main. It means there is something kind of, there's that word they use? Something with an A?
Adrishta.
Yeah, it means just somehow or another. But the form is not as a person, it's as this universal consciousness. So in other words, the concept of God basically is universal consciousness, but God is a person. That doesn't seem to be important to them. So basically they drop Paramatma and Bhagavan. So they're left with Brahman. But they don't seem to be specifically focusing on as Brahman. But if there's liberation, then you just go back to that original universal consciousness. But the funny thing is, if you go to the original, it means that universal consciousness, but you're not conscious. Yeah. So that's kind of a funny. Hmm?
You get something from the outside.
Well, it says you have the potential. You know, hey kid, you got potential. Yeah, you know. But the thing is it's not. It's weird. The whole point is all these things just come down weird. So it's interesting to contradict themselves, as if God creates it, then he'd have to be evil because there's so much bad here. But he created the world. We're the one that makes a mess out of it. Mm. Right? Because if there's no people, it goes on quite nicely. No, isn't it? He had people, and then, you know,
everything starts.
Yeah, they cut down all the trees, and what do you mean, make scarves out of it or something, you know? So it's his problem. Like that.
Make scarves?
Scarves? You don't know? How do you pronounce them? I can't say exactly. Something like, it's a combination of letters. Thedes or something? I don't know. Like that. If you want to know more about this, ask a 6-year-old.
Okay.
Like that. Okay. The demigods are also only mental creations. Even heaven is not an abode. Is not an abode with beautiful gardens, women, and wine. It is a certain undiluted happy state of mind which popular imagination interprets in its own way. Right, so in other words, you can get to a happy state of mind by the performance of this, and then everybody, your imagination, you do it in your own kind of way. You know, what you imagine is good is what you do. It seems to be, it's strange for such a one on one sense, you know, so nicely rooted in, pious and rooted in the Veda, that it's actually just so, there's no substance to it, really.
Buddhistic.
Yeah, no, it's a very strange kind of like that. The concept of duty. Many people are very concerned about their rights, but little aware of their duties. Unless one knows what one's duties are, he cannot understand what his rights are. Demanding rights without accepting duties leads to many problems, as evidenced by today's chaotic global society. Duty may be defined as a tradition of responsibility incumbent upon human beings everywhere that ultimately has divine origin. It is because of the law of duty that the family, society, the nation, and the entire universe continue to exist. The execution of duty handed down by higher authority is the path of honor in all human cultures. Conversely, the path of dishonor is the neglect of duty for the satisfaction of animal urges. History teaches that when the family, society, and nation fail to fulfill traditional duties and instead follow the whims of lust as their only value system, they are soon destroyed. Right? So this is the definition karma is describing this. Okay. Yeah. You could say basically, this part of it's basically right. Mm-hmm. But the thing is that still, who's defined that duty? Who's made these mechanics? You know, does they get into that?
The
Veda. And then the Veda is?
The Veda is just by itself. It doesn't depend on God.
Because it's Apurusha. It doesn't depend on God. It's just always there.
Veda is higher than God.
Oh, the Veda is higher than God. Okay.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting. God follows the Veda. At the same time, he's the one that made the Veda.
But what's the definition of God? Is there something more or above?
Well, because for them, the themselves is more.
It's just like the creation, the janitor or something. I don't.
Yeah, basically, because that's what, I mean, that's what demigods are. I chant my mantra; they have to give me what I want. So that's the thing. They're quite impersonalist, and then they're very impersonal in their If you ever meet smartas, mm-hmm. they do everything right, but it's mm-hmm. super dry. Their mm-hmm. houses are dry, their interactions are dry. It's very exact, very proper. But they as people are extremely dry. Mm. But they're all dry, so they seem to be quite happy together. You know what I'm saying? You know, the mother, father, children. Children do their duties towards the parents towards the duties, husband to wife to husband, you know, family to other family members. So everybody does everything exact, but it's really, really dry. That's the one thing about that smarta, is if you ever go to their house, it's very, very dry. Yes.
Perform this
Panchopasana
system.
Yeah.
So this is their thing?
That seems to be specifically their thing.
It's somehow connected with Shankara as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's because it's a Vedic, because there's that, just as you see, is that the one goes into the next, means it's that, like, elements of Nyaya are there in Vaisheshika, you know, so Shankya and Yoga, so Karma and in what Shankaracharya gives, yeah. So it's just kind of like the elements are there. So they follow that. But they'll be emphasizing the element of mukti. So I would say is that you have the those who are focused on this for karma, and then those who are focused on this for liberation.
Because we were discussing in Jiva Dharma, there was a discussion about
that. Yes, yes. So I would say is there it seems to be more dealing with those who are... I mean, the earlier ones with those who it's just you do your duties and all that, and they're more focused on karma. And they might have even been involved in Tantra and stuff like that, because they're Bengal, so the Tantra comes up a bit more. But also you have a lot of the impersonal. So it's kind of like, you know, it's a funny combination of themselves as personal, but everything else is impersonal, you know, like that, you know, like that. You know, at least the Shankaras are, you know, they're not people, and you know, Supreme's not people, so it's all, you know, yeah, there's some consistency, but here it's like, you know, I'm a person, but nobody else is, kind of. The term dharma is variously translated as virtue, duty, morality, righteousness, or religion, but no single English word conveys the whole meaning of dharma. According to the Karma Mimamsa system, dharma is the intrinsic nature of rita, the breath of cosmic life. One who wants to breathe and to live properly is not supposed to disturb the breath of cosmic life. Disturbing other living beings disturbs the rhythm of the cosmic breath. And that is called a dharma. The performing of dharma establishes peace and harmony in the breath of cosmic life. All those activities that coordinate one's individual life with universal life constitute one's duty or dharma. These activities are prescribed in the Vedic literatures. Right? So, in other words, there's a universal, harmony, that if you perform your duty, that's maintained. If you don't, then you disturb that. So that's why it's a dharma. So dharma means performing what you should do to maintain the cosmic, undisturbing the cosmic breath, right? And then a dharma means where you disturb it, right? So on one level, it is there. This would mean this. I mean that would really work in a yoga studio. Yeah. You know, but the whole point is who is that cosmic breath? Who has written these laws? Yeah. That's where then it goes back to the Lord.
Yeah,
like that. So they only get back to these cosmic consciousness, mm. like that. So is this where that group is?
Maybe that's it.
Right?
The cosmic conference.
The cosmic conference. Yes. So this is where it is. That's why the others can't find, are not sure, because it's actually.
They should get together and discuss.
Yeah. Thneed. Thneed. That's how you pronounce it. Yeah, it's a combination between a scarf and a hat.
A sketch.
Yeah, no, thneed.
Scat is something else.
Yeah, scat is what they do in jazz.
Yeah.
There is always a hierarchy in one's duties. Everywhere and at every moment, a human being is faced with some kind of duty. One has to be very discriminating to understand the appropriate duty that is to be performed at a particular time and place. Right, so in other words, without intelligence, without training, you won't know what to do at what particular time and place, because every time and place there is a duty to perform. Right? That's the you can see difference in the Vedic than in other religious processes, is that there is a duty at every moment, while in others it's lessened. Right? Some have more, some have less, but there's you're doing your duties and then now you can relax, you've done the duties. But here it's even if you're relaxing, there's duties. Right?
That's why they're so dry.
Which?
The minimum sankas.
Yeah, it can be, but at the same time it's there anyway. So now if it means just like this, you want to sit down, you want to watch the movie, okay? So do you get the popcorn first or you get it after?
No, first.
Yeah, so then that's a duty.
Right?
Yeah, whoever walks in. Hey. You know, so I'm saying, in other words, it's down to everything that there's a duty. So the thing is for them, it's just you perform these duties, I will get the results. So it's very dry. But if one can appreciate these and then act within that spontaneous element, then there's a very natural element that this is the reason the duties are there, so that you can, so all the things required for that particular situation and endeavor and people involved works very nicely. Does that make sense? Like that. Yeah. Okay, so it has to be very discriminating. So it takes intelligence and training. One's scriptural authorized role in life provides the key to knowing one's primary duty. Right? So this is their idea of what's primary. So that was the problem before. Right? So primary duty means nitya. Right? What you always have to do. So that was the discussion that was there, was that they can't understand the difference between nitya, which I do every day here, and nitya meaning transcendental, because it uses the same word, right? Because they're saying it's permanent, because they don't believe in beginning and end of anything, so therefore it's permanent. So then they can't see that nitya means connected to the Lord, right? But they're connecting to the spiritual consciousness, not spiritual consciousness, universal consciousness. They don't use the term spiritual, it appears, right? So then, but they're not really catching even the transcendental position of Brahman. So it's kind of like a Brahman in the mode of goodness or something. You know? For example, under the codes of Vedic Dharma, it is the highest duty of a mother to take care of her child. The highest duty of a teacher is to teach, and that of a student is to study, and that of a doctor is to take care of his patients. Karma Mimamsa proclaims that the Vedic rituals are the highest duties of a Brahman has to perform. The science of Vedic rituals is handed down by ancient sages, who hid its methodology in arcane language that is understandable only to the initiate. The efficacy of this science is determined by the subtleties of the time, place, and circumstance of the performance of the rituals, and especially by the brahminical qualifications of the performer of the rituals. Therefore, entrance into the practice, into the practical science, I guess, or into the practice of the science, depends completely upon the sanction of higher authorities. So here is there's higher authorities, but it only goes up to a particular point and then stops. Mm-hmm. So in other words, your higher authorities here, yeah. Right? That's your direct, but then that's the sages, and then that's on the Veda. But it seems that, you know, yeah, then So the idea is that you have to know these things. And so the Veda describes what's the most important, so you know what's the primary duty, just like for the teacher to teach or for the mother to take care of the child. You know, that's the primary. Then everything else is supportive of that. All the other elements go into that. Otherwise, then you might not know which one's where. You know, you could do that. You could, you know, it means you could take care of the child. You could go to the spa. The babysitter can take care of the child. So, you know, it's just something has to, you know. So it's not worked out nicely by speculation. So authority is giving it. Mm-hmm. Now that you have to get from other authorities, other Brahmins who know, because time, place, and circumstance, what would be the appropriate thing? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So then you have to work it out.
Mm-hmm. What's their parampara?
What is their parampara? I'm not sure. Just, I don't know. They just kind of exist. Because there's so many Brahmins that are just doing it. Huh?
Follow the whole creation?
Yeah, kind of. No, but I'm saying there's other Brahmins and they've always been there, so I'm not sure if they probably just say they're in the line of Karma Mimamsa, so they go back to Jaimini, I guess. I'm not exactly sure.
But they do have the family priests and all that stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
There was, I heard Sri Maharaj once explaining that there was the story of Puru Rava, who wanted this. I forgot the name of this.
Urvasa.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And since that time, they start to be.
Okay, so that's where the karma is. Okay, yeah.
That's,
okay.
So he was the first one to.
Yes, I guess he's the one started. Because he he was the one who started yajna. You know, in the way of these karmakanda yajnas. I think before that, it wasn't there.
It was not prominent.
Yeah. But he started it. It mentions that Bhagavatam gives the story, right? And then Urvasi came, and it was kind of like, you're going to all this trouble? What's the big deal? You know, like that. So
I was going to say too, in the 10th canto, there's the Yajic Brahmana, so Krishna and Balaram are having fun with them.
Yeah. That's all part of the scene. Yeah. So I guess ultimately they come from there, but. Yeah. Because that's also then in that time, the Dwapara, so the yajna has already been established.
Right.
Yeah, because in other ages, you'll get the deity worship is established first. You know, you go from meditating on the Super Soul to worshipping the Super Soul, then into the sacrifices.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like that, these big sacrifices, and then into Harinam.
Mm-hmm.
But when Krishna comes, it gets reversed the other way. So that way it's already there, because then it's already in the pastimes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Ritual duty and philosophy. Most people lack a positive attitude of inspiration towards their daily duties, performing them only to earn money or status. Ritualism illuminated by philosophy gives one awareness of the deep significance of even the small duties of life. Everyone has a morning routine composed of various steps. For example, a working man awakens early, goes to the toilet, brushes his teeth, washes his face, shaves, takes a shower, dresses, and finally eats. This must be more of a Vedic guy, because if it was a modern guy, he would be, yeah, that. Or he would go to the toilet, shower, then shave. Right? Then he would dress. But sometimes they partly dressed when they shave. It's
while driving they shave.
Yeah, that's also there. And the kids eat while they're also in the back of the car, right? Because they didn't get up for all this. They don't have a routine yet other than just getting out of bed and going to school. Right? He does none of this with any sense of consecration. His actions have no higher end or aim than simply to reach the office at exactly 9 o'clock. As a result, he does not experience any particular fulfillment from the activities he performs from bathroom through breakfast. His whole life rotates through a mechanical framework because of his mundane view of existence. But viewing the daily unexceptional routines of life as rituals linked to the cycles of the cosmos helps expand the consciousness beyond the shadowness of workday life. In short, a ritual is a meditation. When a brahmana takes breakfast as an offering or oblation to the fire of digestion within, remembering that the same cosmic principle of fiery energy burns within the bellies of all creatures and within the sun and electricity and the sacrificial fire, then the whole process is transformed, although the activities are the same as always. Right? So that's the point, is that you're going to do all these things anyway, so if you follow them according to the Vedic, then you're doing something, it actually becomes sacrifice, it actually becomes meditation. So everything becomes purifying, everything becomes uplifting, right? But the problem is they've done that, so this is all very nice, but then they've only done that just so that they will be able to enjoy nicely at a better level, that's all. So all this nice inspiration gets wasted, because then it's not to know the Supreme Lord. Right? But, you know, for explaining, just like the other systems, like Nyaya could explain why God has to exist in that. So here they're explaining why duties must be performed. You know, so they explain it very well. You know, the proper balance of the whole, you know, creation and all these different things. It works very nicely. They've got good explanations for this, because this is all they focus on. So this part's good. But the only problem is they only take it to a particular level and stop, just like the others. They only take it to a particular level and stop. So God exists, but they're not interested in becoming God conscious. Right? Like that. So here is that duties are important, but these duties that connect to the Lord, that gets left out. You know? Footnote 23. In the Bhagavad Gita 3:14-15, the Lord says, "All living bodies subsist on food grains, which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. Regulated activities are prescribed in the Vedas, and the Vedas are directly manifest from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Consequently, the all-pervading transcendence is eternally situated in acts of sacrifice." Right? So you're saying is the everyone lives on grains. Grains come from rain. Rain comes from sacrifice, right? So the sacrifice is coming from the duties. The duties are based on the Veda. The Veda comes from the Lord. Therefore, the Lord is situated in sacrifice, right? It doesn't go down to, you know, the rain and the grains. It's the sacrifice, right? So the Lord descends into it in Hoksaja. I think this is when we were discussing the other day in the Jiva Dharma, when we were discussing the five levels of consciousness, and then he drops even the devotional down, so that they would fit within there. Then what it does is your what did we have? And that was in meditation. We had two levels of devotees. So that higher level would be Anandamai. The next one down would be Vijnanamai. Because in Vijnanamai, that's when you're dealing with the source of understanding of that level of consciousness. Then it's Adhoksaja, which means the Lord enters into things. So he entered what he describes in Shastras, he's entering into. Right? In other words, the sense of duties, all these different things like that. That higher level is there. You know, in that primary creation. So then that gives that level. And then you have come down from there. Then you have the Dharma, Artha, and Kama. So that would be the moksha and bhakti. But then you have those various levels within the bhakti. Does that make sense? So if it comes up again, we can see that. So in other words, the Lord comes down into that much. So from that subtle, then he comes down to the level of Dharma, right? Because that Hoksaja, he's entered into everything. That's the principle. And then you perform the principle with that understanding connected to the Lord. He descends down into there. Now, from there, that stops. Now, you have to connect everything else back up to that. So, Artha and Karma, you have to connect up to Dharma if you wanted to get to connect to the Lord. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. So unless it's that's where, so as we see here is then the food the bodies, the food grains, the rains, like that, then that part has to be connected up to sacrifice, and the Lord descends down into the into sacrifice. So that's as low, that's as what level he enters, he comes into. Okay, that's the end of that one. In the Karma Mimamsa concept, rituals are performed not to worship or please any deity, but rather simply because the Veda commands one to perform them. Thus, rituals are practiced for the sake of duty. Food is cooked, and through the use of mantras, the cosmic deity, Mahapurush, in whom the demigods and all beings dwell, is invited to partake of the food and grant blessings in return. But the offering is not made as an act of devotion. Rather, the Karma Mimamsaka believes the Mahapurusha is obliged by the ritual to accept the offering and give benedictions. Right? Because that's what he said before, is that because they're saying here is that they're giving just because they feel like it, that they don't believe in. That their thing is, I've done the ritual, then they have to give the result. Right? Rather than they'll give results if you do the ritual. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? They're looking at it the other way. Mm-hmm. Means they've said, I will be pleased with you if you do this ritual. So if you do the ritual, then you'll get the result. But they're looking at it the other way. It's, no, I've done the ritual, therefore you have to be pleased, and you have to give the result. Mm-hmm. Right?
Those sisters, they are existing only in Kali Yuga?
Which?
The sixth one?
No, I think they're always there. But it's just they're being, you know, kind of more prominent than that maybe at this time. But like, yeah, could be. I'm not sure how you would establish them, but like Daksha is a Karmakandi. So that's why he can't accept Shiva's position. Shiva is just his son-in-law. He's not like he's Shiva Tattva, he's the lord of the material energy, you know, he's, you know, this or that, just he's his son-in-law, and that's the duties. So when Shiva doesn't perform those duties, then he feels he's, you know, not behaving properly, so he's immoral. So therefore he sees it, you know, quite comfortable to feel that he has the right to therefore deal with him as a immoral person. You know.
Ravana also be Karma
Mimamsa? No, slight difference there, because Ravana does believe in God, right? Which they don't. Ravana himself is God. All it is they've accepted, okay, we're little God, and so they're happy with that. They're not trying to be the one supreme God. But Ravana kind of had a little bit more. Yeah.
Spirit.
Ambition.
Yes.
In this case, Mahapurush will be the Brahman?
No, Mahapurush will be the cosmic deity of Mahapurush. That would mean the thousand-headed Purusha, you know, of Purusha Shukta. Because for them, then that would be... So I think they would be considering him. But the point is he just... All it is that they've done it, so therefore he has to give the benedictions. So they're offering the food, and so therefore it becomes blessed and all that, but because I'm doing the offering properly, they have to bless it. Yeah. Not that I'm doing it for their blessing, it's that I'm doing it and they have to bless it. You know? So it's the mentality's wrong.
It's the same principle in Judaism, the mitzvah. Basically, so
yeah.
You do, he has to give it.
Yeah. Well, so it's basically you'll find in all paths of karma, that's basically how they'll look at it. I've done the good work, so why aren't I getting a good result? Or I must get a good result. Or, and if I'm not, then somebody else is at fault because I did everything right. So, you know.
I think that they don't accept the law of karma, that's why they do other religions. Those ones, they do accept the law of karma.
Yeah, so they just think, well, you know, that means, in other words, you don't have to go someplace. You'll enjoy now. I mean, the other ones you're talking about, they're also, it's enjoy. That's, you know, the whole... But it's... Yeah.
In the reverse, I was thinking that from this is like complete karma thing, and then the different religions, they like just took different aspects of it.
Yeah.
Like Buddhists took, and the Greeks took, and Jews took, and Christians.
Yeah.
And then, and still it's so attractive, and they have a lot of followers, although it's just a part of a part.
Yeah, yeah. So you can see how dedicated the smartest will be.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's why when what's his name? You know, Aurangzeb, and then when it came through, then a lot of Brahmins died, you know, because they're going to stick to that, because that's how their duty is. Because that was the thing, is, you know, it's like, you give us your Brahmin thread, or we kill you and take the Brahmin thread, as you like. You know? So, you know, they collected piles. They used to weigh the Brahmin threads. That's how we had a quota, that it was by weight, not by number, by weight of Brahmin threads. They had to go out and come back with that many Brahmin threads every day. Like that, so, you know. So a lot converted. Because one-fifth of India is Muslims, you know. And we're not talking about those, you know, coming from that side. You know, the more Patani-looking Wallahs, you know, what do you call it? Not Udristan, Insanistan, Tajikistan, Uzbekistan. Yeah, so they don't look like Uzbekis, or they don't look like Patans, so they were converted. So it's just how it works. But basically, yeah. Mastery of the ritual is mastery over the powers of the universe. By proper execution of ritual, the performer expects to enjoy prosperity on earth and to be promoted to heaven. The Karma Mimamsaka system teaches that one can cut one's own poisonous plant of past bad karma with the powerful acts of present good karma in the form of the performance of Vedic rituals. Right. So, but what's the point is you can only cut, meaning there won't be any more at some point, but it's not by doing a good work you get rid of a bad work. As you do a good work, you'll get a good result. But the idea is that, okay, I've done something bad, what can I do to counteract that? No, all it is you'll get that, and if you do something good, you'll get that also. So you'll get both. You can't actually counteract. In contrast, the Vedanta philosophy teaches that the result of human endeavor depends upon the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 7.7.48. The four principles of advancement in spiritual life, artha, kama, and moksha, all depend on the disposition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, life, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. All depend on the disposition of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, my dear friends, follow in the footsteps of devotees without desire, fully dependent on the disposition of the Supreme Lord, and worship Him, the Supersoul, in devotional service. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, these are the words of intelligence. Everyone should know that in every stage of life, we are dependent upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Dharma, religion, which we accept, should be that which is recommended by Prahlad Maharaj, Bhagavat Dharma. This is the instruction of Krishna, Sarva Dharmam Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Bhagavad Gita 18.66. To take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna means to act according to the rules and regulations of Bhagavat Dharma, devotional service. As far as economic development is concerned, we should discharge our occupational duties, but fully depend on the lotus feet of the Lord for the results. Karman yeva dikaras te ma phaleshu kadachana. You have a right to perform your prescribed duty, but you are not entitled to the fruits of action. According to one's position, one should perform his duties, but for the results, one should fully depend upon the Lord. So he's saying, performance of your duties, you have a position and performance of your duties, that's your right, but the results, that's not yours. That's you depend upon the Lord for. Narottam Das Thakur sings that our only desire should be to perform the duties of Krishna consciousness. We should not be misled by the Karma Mimamsa philosophy, which concludes that if we work seriously, the results will come automatically. This is not a fact. The ultimate results depends upon the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In devotional service, therefore, the devotee completely depends upon the Lord and honestly performs his occupational duties. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj advised his friends to depend completely on Krishna and worship him in the devotional service. So in other words, one would say, okay, if you're depending upon the Lord, then everybody will just sit around and be lazy. But the point is no, you're supposed to perform your duties. Right, the God-given duties, you're supposed to perform them, but the results, you're dependent upon the Lord, because he's the super soul, he sanctions. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the mentality. Otherwise, then you fall into this mentality, I've done it, I deserve it. Right? Like that. But then the problem comes is, have you actually done it? Because as Karma Mimamsa is pointing out, you perform your duty, then you can talk rights. Right? Right? Does that make sense? So first do your duty, then we'll talk rights, right? You know, like, isn't that what Shankaracharya said? So that's the whole thing, is that you start like that, then it'll work. But the problem is that if we think, no, I've done it, so I deserve it, then the problem comes is, then how will you know the Lord? And the thing is then there's so many things that if it's depending upon you, then it's got to be exact. That's why. And then the rituals, they're very exact about each little thing, because then nothing will go wrong, you know, anywhere. But the problem is for the devotee, even if he's not, doesn't know all the details, still things go right. That's because it's the Lord, right? Does that make sense? Also, yeah. Sources of valid knowledge. The physical is divine. Okay, that looks like a good one. Yeah. That's really going to work in this yoga studio. Okay, so end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki.
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premanam.